November 3rd, it is 1:45. This is David Wasson conducting the interview. And if you go ahead and state your full name, please.
My full name is Nazareth Donjoyan, and a lot of times they call me Naz,
okay,
for Naz. Short.
Okay, and do you mind if I call you Naz?
No,
okay.
Go ahead.
Could you tell me, Naz, when you were born and where?
I was born November 11th, 1924, down at Lincoln Place. And with my mom and dad were Armenians. And as far as I know, I thought I was delivered by Dr. Benny, but I think what it was a, what is it, the woman?
Midwife.
Midwife, and then Dr. Benny had the last say-so on it.
To sign the paperwork.
Right, he signed the papers on it.
Were you born at home?
Evidently I was born at home, yeah, at the house.
Was that normal at the time?
Yes, that was normal at the time because most of them, like my sister, I have an older sister and another sister, I think the only one that was delivered by Dr. Benny was my youngest sister. And normally we had a midwife delivering the babies.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I've got three sisters, one older and two younger. And then my older sister's name is Satnik, S-A-T-A-N-I-C-K. And my sister, I was second, and the third born was my sister Violet. And then the fourth one was my sister Audrey. And we were all born in Lincoln Place. And my dad at the time had a building. He had a where Sammy's Tavern is now. He used to have a frame building there before that, and that burnt down. And we lived on Chestnut Street. I forgot the address on Chestnut Street, but the building was burning down, and he was sleeping, and they came over and knocked on the door and said, Casper, your building's on fire. He says, let it burn. He says, I'll build another one. And that's what it was. So they had burnt the building. And we had a dog back then. I don't know if I should even tell you this, but we had a dog. Its name was Tony. And the dog thought that we were inside the building, and he would run in and out the building to try to get to us, you know. And he got burnt bad, so my dad had to have him destroyed. But that's the story that I remember is we had a dog. We went out there, and he would be running in and out. But and I still tell that to my kids and all that stuff, and they always want me to tell them the story. Dad, tell us about Tony, you know.
What year was that?
Oh, that had to be, well, I wasn't very old, so I guess that might have been around 1930, maybe, somewhere around in there.
Can you tell me something about your parents, where they were born? And
my mom was born in Erzurum, E-R-Z-R-U-M, I believe is the way you spell it, in Turkey now, but it was Armenia. And the Turkish people have taken it over. My dad was born in Mush, that was in Armenia also. And then he had gone to Bulgaria, and where his dad was, and his dad was a cook, a chef, and my dad was a cook and a chef also. That was their trade, really. And he came to this country around 1903, and he worked on a railroad to make money in Northern Railroad, I don't know. I always say Great Northern, but I don't think that's the proper name for it. But it was in North Dakota, South Dakota, in that area, Minnesota. And back then he was only getting maybe 10 cents an hour, something about that. But he saved his money. And I think he had also spent some time in Bettendorf, Iowa. And from what I understand, also he had had a place in New Jersey, but I don't know too much about that. And then he came, I don't know what year he came to Lincoln Place, but well, we were born in Lincoln Place, so I know, and my sister was born there. She's older than I. So he had to be in the Lincoln Place in the 1920s, 1920, something like that. My mom had lost all her relatives during the Turkish massacre, is what it was. I mean, people might not say it was a massacre, but it was. She had lost all her relatives, so she was the only one. I could tell you how my dad brought her over, if you're interested in that or not.
Yes, because somebody had brought that up in class about the Turkish and Armenian genocide and so forth. And so if you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, see, my dad was here, and he had a first cousin. His name was Tom Donjoyan, or we called him, his Armenian name was Totos. And my dad, he sent him some money to come over here, and Totos had a girl that he was going to marry, so my dad told him to bring another woman for him from Armenia. So my dad sent him money for that, and they came over. They came to I don't know what part of the states. I don't think they went to Ellis Island. I think they might have came directly through because they had the money to come through. And he had lost some money while he was in New York. He said somebody took it from him, you know. So he wired my dad back and asked for some more money. My dad sent him some more money, and then he came to Granite City. My dad seen my mom. He wasn't too happy. He didn't want to marry her. He says, because my mom was married previously, and lost all. She had four kids before us, and she lost them over there. And I don't think it was any mask or anything. I think they just died naturally for somebody's mother. And but my dad wasn't too happy with my mom. So a lot of the other bachelor Armenians that were there, Lincoln Place, they said, well, Casper, if you don't want him, we'll take her. If you don't want her, we'll take her. So he changed his mind. He thought if somebody else wanted him, he better keep her.
Yeah. What did your mother do? Did she have a job outside the home? Or was she
no,
home
she,
right
she was just... She helped my dad cook, you know, when he had the building. He had where Sammy's Tavern is now. That used to be my father's building. And we used to have rooms upstairs. We had he had a restaurant, and he would cook, and my mom used to help him with the cooking, and she would take care of the rooms upstairs and also take care of us. So basically, her job mainly was staying home and helping my father and taking care of us.
What was the name of the business that your father had?
Well, it was Casper's coffee, restaurant and coffee house. He didn't have his name on the window or anything, but that's what it was, Casper's. And then he also had pool tables in there where people came in and played pool and played cards. And then he served coffee, to drink Turkish coffee mostly, and people, the bachelors that weren't around there, they would, when they worked, they'd come to the restaurant and eat. And my dad used to keep books on them. Some of them before, they didn't have any jobs, and he would just keep track of what they ate and kept books on them, kept a ledger on them, so that whenever they were able to pay him back, they would be able to pay him back.
Did you live on the premises, or did you have a separate house?
For a short time there, we had a separate house, and then we moved from there into the building upstairs, where my dad had some rooms upstairs, so we lived on the premises in the building there for quite a few years. And I think my my Uncle Totos, he lived where we were living. He lived in that house for a while on Chestnut Street. And then from there he moved. He moved further down to, I think it's, I guess that's Walnut Street out there, somewhere closer towards the depot, one street over Spruce or Walnut. I can't remember the name of the street.
You know if this house is still there?
The house is still there, right. His house is still there. Both houses are still there. His house is still there. Somebody else owns it now. They sold it a few years back when my cousin George, Don Joyan, he was going blind and stuff. And he had diabetes and he was going blind. And as long as he was living there, he kept the house. But he was also a teacher, though, in California. He taught school in California. Mm-hmm. He was a certified teacher in California. He had, as a matter of fact, he had moved there quite a few years ago teaching. And then when he got to the point where he couldn't teach anymore because of eyes and stuff and diabetes, well, he came back here to Lincoln Place, and the house was still theirs, so he went and opened up the house and stayed in there for quite a few years until he passed away.
You mentioned your father's business, Casper's. Is that building still standing?
That's Sammy's Tavern. It's got that.
Sammy's Tavern
is where it's at. He had lost the building during the Depression there. Right after the Depression, really. He lost the building around 1936 or 37, somewhere in there when people were starting to work back up.
And when you were talking about the men who stayed there and he would keep books on them, was that during the Depression?
Yes, that was during the Depression where they didn't have any jobs. These were immigrants also that came to this country. And they weren't married, they were single. Because back then, only the single people went out to eat. The married couples stayed home and their wives cooked. It's not like it is today where people go out and eat all the time. Married couples would go out with their children and eat. Back then it was just the single bachelors that would, mostly bachelors that came and ate and slept upstairs.
Okay. What do you remember about the Depression? Is there anything that sticks out in your mind?
No, to me, I never felt any thing about the Depression. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I always had food. My dad always had food there. Of course, he was buying food on the cuff, too, from Mitzoff's market back then. And he would buy groceries from there, and then he would have to push a book, as they call it, you know, and get a little credit. And Mitzoff naturally kept a ledger on him as to what he owed him and everything else. And when the time came, when my dad, after he had lost the building, actually, but because when I came back from service, Mitzoff wanted my dad to pay him back his money that he owed him, you know. So it ended up that I had paid off the bills that my dad had for the grocery store, for the food that he would buy to cook and give to the immigrants who never paid him back. Half of them would say, I'll give you half, and some would say I won't give you anything.
So if he lost the business in about 36?
No, 36, right.
And so when you came back from the war, which was when?
Oh, see, we had moved back then. And back then that was 921 Pacific Avenue. That was Pacific Avenue before Niedring House, maybe before they had changed it to Niedring House. It's Niedring House today. Mm-hmm. And so we moved from there to what was then 944 Pacific Avenue, the Niedring House. And there was a big frame building there, which my dad was renting and using the part of it as a restaurant and doing business there before I went in service. And then when I went in service and I came back, that's where I came back to 944 Niedring House.
So that was about 10 years after he'd lost the business is when the bills got paid off.
No, but see, it was after I come back. It was about, I'd say, maybe longer, 10 years, because it was 1945. When did I get discharged? I guess it was around 1945, when I got discharged. So, It would have to be somewhere around there before Mitzoff got his money.
About 10 years then for him, about 10, 11 years for him to get his money. Did they charge interest back then?
Not that I'm aware. No, there was no interest ever charged back then. I'm sure that Mitzoff didn't charge interest either.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school, grade school, I went to Washington School, which was down West Granite, and I went there through the sixth grade, and then from there I went to Central School, which was downtown here, near the library in that area there, and where the seniors, I call it the senior center, but is downtown, and that's there used to be Central School there before they built that place, and that's where I went to school for my seventh and eighth grades, and then I went to Granite City High School downtown here, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
What year did you graduate?
I graduated in 1943, June 43.
What's your most vivid memory of your childhood?
Well, all I remember is we used to go to the levee a lot of times, and during the winter there used to be a hill like there, and we'd get our sleds and slide down the hills, and also go to community center, which all of us kids used to always go there all the time, and Miss Prather then was in charge of the community center, and she would have all the kids based on their age as to what time they would have to leave to go home, so that they wouldn't be staying out late, and the younger kids would always have to go home earlier, and about 9 o'clock the older ones had to leave, because they used to close the community club up at 9 o'clock. We used to call it the community club, right? Community house.
What religion were you then, or did your
well, back then, I was Armenian religion, but we didn't have a church down there, so most of us would go to Sunday school at the community center. Every Sunday, we'd go to community center to go to Sunday school. That was closest we came. As far as myself goes, there's others who had, they went to Catholic schools, Catholic churches and other churches, but I don't ever recall ever going to a church until, I've been to churches, but I don't recall joining, belonging to the church until we had the church down Lincoln Place, St. Gregory's Armenian Community Center, St. Gregory's Armenian Church, Apostolic Church. That's where I started going to church, and that was after we had our kids, after I got married and had my kids, is when I started really going to church. Oh. Prior to that, I didn't, but during my youth, we was always in Sunday school.
Because at the community center?
At the community center, until we went to service. That's about the last time I remember.
What, how did you celebrate the holidays, Christmas, New Year's?
We would celebrate the holidays. I would always recite, we used to live upstairs, I remember mostly in the building at 921 Pacific Avenue, and we would come downstairs and would greet our father and our mother with Christ has risen, and on Christmas, we'd say Christos Tzanav Yevhain Etzav, and we'd kiss his hand all the time whenever we'd say that. And say, well, our mother, and he would always give us something whenever we did that. And with Christmas, Easter, we'd have Easter eggs. And Christmas, we celebrated, but it was mostly just amongst ourselves that we would celebrate it, except for back then I had a cousin who was working at the time that I remember mostly, was after whenever the Commonwealth started opening up, and he had, the Commonwealth used to give all the workers a box of candy all the time. They would bring that home for Christmas. But Easter we would celebrate with eggs and stuff, go around breaking eggs, If you broke someone's egg, you got to keep that egg. That's, you challenge them, you know, eggs. And they would all try to do all kinds of things to make the shells hard before Easter so that you could win.
Could break your egg.
Yeah.
Was Christmas celebrated as it's done now on the 25th and then the New Year's, or was there different
days? Most of the times that I remember was when I was little, it was the 25th. That's when we celebrate. But today, it's celebrated. I mean, our church, we have both. We celebrate on the 25th, and then we celebrate also, it's on the 6th of January when we celebrate Christmas. So we actually we go by the old Gregorian calendar in the church. So actually, we have the, what you call it, the luck to celebrate both days.
Right, yeah. Fortunate enough
to celebrate both days. We're fortunate enough to celebrate both days. So we, at our church mostly, most of the time, it's the 25th, but then we also have it on the 6th of January.
Based on the Gregorian calendar.
Yeah, because that's the old Christmas. They said that whenever they changed the calendar, changed the dates.
So after you were married and so forth is when you started attending church, and then so you carried that on and the tradition
up to date, up to now. I go there, I try to make every Sunday. Very seldom do I miss.
Did you have an outside job when you were growing up? Did you help your father at the business?
No. When I was growing up, we used to pick spuds, potatoes on the farms. I mean, we used to get maybe a dollar a day. During the summertime, we'd work there and get a dollar or so a day. And you'd only work there a few weeks one place, then you move on to another place. But we didn't work too long on that. And I'd save my money, but that money was mine. I didn't have to give it to my dad. There was nothing. But I would buy my sister a present. As a matter of fact, I worked 2 weeks and went out and bought her a bracelet, which cost, I think, $10 or something like that. That was my 2 weeks' pay, you know, picking potatoes. And back then, you really worked hard to pick potatoes because we were kids then, you know. But also, during high school, I worked for AYA. I don't know, what is it? They gave us an opportunity to work for $3 a month. You worked, did different things, like you'd work maybe in a tool room. And I used to be in a pattern shop, so we used to work. I used to get a job in a tool room there, checking out tools for guys who used to come to night school there to work in pick up pattern making. And then also, I would help with the coach on track and gym and stuff and get paid $3 a month. And I think I got $6 a month. And then I didn't have what you call a steady job because I was 17, but I did get a job my last half year of high school at the depot. I got a job there in 43 in the Grand City Army Depot, and I worked there for about 3 months before I went to service, and that was the steady job I had. The money we always got, my sisters, myself, whenever we got any money, we always gave it to our father. No questions asked. He didn't tell us we had to give it to him or anything like that, but we always gave it to him. And if we needed any money, he'd give us $5, $10 or whatever we wanted, you know. But the money always went to him.
When you worked picking spuds, what was the work day? How long was it?
We'd start off early in the morning. I think we had to be there, start at 7 or 6, somewhere around there. We'd ride our bikes over to where Chain of Rocks Bridge is in that area, and we'd ride our bikes there, and then it would be about 7 o'clock before we get off. We'd work about 10, 12 hours. And then the farmer used to feed us, you know. He would have a break about 10 o'clock and bring out sandwiches and stuff like that. His wife would make it and bring out sandwiches at noon. We'd go into the farmer's house, and he had a meal out of this world in there. And we would eat then, and then afterwards we'd go back out in the field about 3 o'clock, something like that. They'd give us another break and bring out stuff, and then about 7 we went home.
Now, was this only boys worked at that?
Only boys, yeah. Just guys. They would dig up the potatoes, and you go around picking up the potatoes and put them in a pile.
When you got the job at the depot, of course, you just walked walked to work there. Did your parents ever have an automobile?
No, my parents never owned a car, nothing like that. I had a bike. I used to ride my bicycle back when I lived in Lincoln Place at 944. I'd ride my bike back and forth to high school. And sometimes I would just, back then I used to like to run. And I would run all the way up there and run all the way back. And then I'd, whenever I was going to high school, just soon I got home, I'd go to the depot and work from, I think it was 4 to 12 at night. And then I'd get up in the morning and go back to school in the morning.
What did you do at the depot?
I was, back then, I was a carpenter's helper. I would, basically what amounted to is, you'd go out to the lumber yard and stack lumber on trailers or trucks that would be sent to the carpenter shop. And were basically what they, not carpenter shop, but actually it was a shop where they made boxes and so forth, crates and all those other things. And they would have to have the lumber there, so we would just stack it on trailers and then have to unload it when it got there. And they would use the carpenters would cut up the wood for whatever they needed for.
Build boxes for shipping stuff.
Right.
So
forth.
Now, if your parents didn't have a car, was it economic, or was the community able to provide everything that you needed, and there really wasn't much?
There was no need for a car for us. When we were kids, we didn't really need a car. Once in a while, somebody who would have a car, that is when we were little, once in a while, somebody would have a car, they would pick us up and maybe take us to Wilson Park or a couple other areas around here, you know, where we'd have something going maybe on Sundays. But after I got out of service, I didn't have a car either. A couple buddies of mine, one guy, he'd been on a car from the depot, Reuben Parsage, and he'd been on a car from the depot and got it. It was a Ford. It was an old Oliver Drive painted Ford, and we used to ride with him. He used to take us different places a lot of times. And there was another guy. His name, we called him Depo. His name was Abraham Detosian. He used to take us out also when we get together. We'd go to what we call Blubby's, which was Simon's place. Simon's place. It's still there today. And we would go over there and sit around and gather around there. And then one of the guys with the car come by. Why? We'd all get together and go someplace. We'd go to East St. Louis, or we'd go mainly around back then. The East St. Louis had bands and stuff going, big bands and stuff going.
And they talked about, you know, it was an ethnic community, and sometimes it wasn't well received in Granite City. When you went to high school, you said it was down near the library.
The high school was here.
Oh,
this was what you call, I don't know whether you call it middle school today or what, but it's Central School is what it was. That was after you passed the sixth grade, then you went to another school for the seventh and eighth grade near the library.
Right. And so was high school in Lincoln Place as well, or was it in Granite City then?
No, high school was in Granite City.
Okay. How did you get to high school?
I used to ride my bike,
I
said, yes. Mm-hmm. And then when we were going to Washington School, we'd always walk, and then we'd have to go through West Granite. And a lot of times, they would call us hunkies, you know. they would call us hunkies, and we would call them Hoosiers, because they were from different part. We had to call them something, you know.
Yeah.
And there used to be quite a few fights with one another, you know, chasing one another back home and all that stuff. But after I got out of service, whenever we went somewhere like East St. Louis, and if any guys from Lincoln Place got in trouble, we would always holler out West Granite or Lincoln Place, and these guys that we used to have fights with, they'd come out and help us, you know. That's one thing we did. We stuck together when we was out somewhere else.
So
at an older age, right. At a younger age, we were always chased after. So,
so that, I mean, there was harassment and so forth,
right,
because of your ethnic background.
Yeah, right. I mean, but it wasn't near that bad. I never had any problems during my whole time, but I know that I had friends who was always, somebody was always picking on them, or they would stand up and fight back, you know. They wouldn't take off, they would fight back.
When you were in class, was it pretty, was it kept under control by teachers?
Or? Yes, the teachers had very good control of the class. Matter of fact, my first year when I went to grade school, I would go to school and I would just get sick. I couldn't stay in class because I would get sick. I don't know whether I was homesick or what. And the teacher would tell me, oh, man, go in outside and get some air, you know. And I would go outside and I'd go on home. I wouldn't stay. My uncle, his name was Hutton Don Joint, a lot of times I had to be carried to school because I didn't want to go to school. I guess I was too homesick or wasn't ready for it. So my first year, I failed. Back then, they failed you. They didn't mess around with you, you know, like pass you just because they wanted you to go on.
Right.
So I was 1 year behind throughout school. That was the only time I failed.
Did they have a kindergarten and then a first grade, or you just started in your first grade?
Just started in first grade, right? We didn't have no kindergarten.
So you started about 6 years old then?
6 years old, right.
You mentioned you went in the military. Were you drafted or did you join?
I was drafted, yes. Yeah, I was drafted. My father was trying to keep me from getting into the draft because my two sisters, my mom and my dad, and he wasn't doing very good there. He wanted me to stay out of the draft. He was trying to get me to stay out, but I didn't stay out. I went in service, but then I had allotments sent home. You know, back then, what was you getting? I was getting maybe $20 or something like that a month back then. And then I had allotment for my mom, dad, my two sisters, because he wasn't, even though he had a restaurant, he wasn't making any money then, during that period. He was up in age, he was getting up in age.
So he had health problems.
Right, but the allotment is what I would send back on all the years that I was in service. He had gotten allotment.
How old were you when you went into service?
18.
And when did you go in?
I went in June of 43.
And what did did you do when you were in the military?
Well, I went to airplane and engine mechanic school. I was in the, matter of fact, when I got drafted, we were on a train leaving. I forgot what it was, a place in Michigan that where we were at, and we were leaving that area there, and a guy, the officer, somebody stood up and he says, "All you guys are going in the Air Force." Well, it was the Air Corps then, it wasn't the Air Force. He says, all you people are going to the Air Corps. I didn't enlist in the Air Corps or anything like that. I was drafted into the Army. It was a matter of where they wanted to send me. You know, we had taken the aptitude tests and different things like that. They asked me what I wanted to be, and I told them I wanted to be a mechanic. So they sent me to Gulfport, Mississippi. That's where I had my basic training. Went to airplane and engine mechanic school there. And then after basic training, well, I went to, we went to school there. And I forgot how many months we were there. And then from there, I went to Smyrna, Tennessee. That used to be an Air Force base back then. Now it's, they got Japanese automakers there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And then from there, I went to Seattle, Washington, Boeing B-29 school, and we were the last class going through there. And ours was at the time to go through from B-29 school to Fort Myers, Florida. That was our itinerary. And then we went from supposed to go from Fort Myers, Florida to South Pacific, but we never did get that far. The war in Japan had ended. And I went to Maxwell Field and had my discharged there.
At Maxwell Field?
Alabama.
When did you get out?
I was in there 32 months, so I guess that was about 45.
32 months?
Yeah, is when I was in 32 months. So.
Now, when you went in the military, was that the first time you had left Lincoln Place, you know, on any trip? Or
basically, that was the first time, yeah. I never, well, I went, when we were smaller, we had a band, too, an Armenian band, you know, in which we used to, there was about 10 or 12 of us in the band. And we made a trip to Detroit. That was about the first time, hardest I ever got away. We were about 10 years old, 12 years old, something like that. We went to Detroit.
What instrument did you play?
I played the clarinet.
In the school band?
I went to the school band after this wasn't in the school band, this was an Armenian band. Oh. And we used to play for different functions, you know, like if they have some kind of doing going on, we would play. And we were all young kids then. But whenever I first started high school, during the summer, I went to the band and played and I was able to get first chair as far as clarinet because I was way ahead of all the other guys who had never done anything. But I went to the vocational shop instead, pattern making. So I had to quit the band. I couldn't play in the band no more because we didn't have time for that back then.
Were any of your parents musically inclined?
My mother's father supposedly was a very good violinist, and she always wanted us to play violin. We used to, she bought us a violin in grade school there, and we tried to play it a few times and stuff, but we never took it up, never did really get that interested in it, but I still got the violin.
Did the school furnish the instrument, or did your parents have to pay for the clarinet?
No. At the time we was in the Armenian band, the people who got the band together paid for the instruments and gave it to us kids. They actually gave it to us. We had them. I had them for a long time. When we come back from service, I had the keys all repaired and everything. I lent it to my sister for her girl to play it. I never got it back.
Did you ever take lessons?
Never took any lessons.
Picked it up on your own.
Yeah, we had a Armenian person who was the leader of the band, and he would have you play and stuff. But he was basically the one, but never really had any what you call real lessons.
When you were growing up, do you remember any of the other ethnic groups and any of their traditions and so forth?
Yes, I remember the Hungarians. I remember the Bulgarians and Macedonians, and they were pretty close to what we were involved in, you know, as far as food and dances and stuff like that. It was pretty close to ours, maybe not the Hungarians, but the Macedonians, Bulgarians, the Greeks. Well, we only really had one Greek family down there. Then we had Italians, and we all got along good with one another. As a matter of fact, I remember one time coming home from school, for some reason or other, this one Hungarian man grabbed me by the ear and twisted my ear. For what reason? I don't know. I must have done something. I had never knew what it was. And I didn't go home and tell my dad or my mom or anybody, because if you did, they figured you did something wrong. You'd get another spanking. But we all got along with one another. We always greeted each other. Every time I'd walk down the street, no matter what nationality were, I would always say, hi, how are you doing, you know.
So there was no animosity among the ethnic groups within?
Not that I was aware of. If there was, it had to be among the older ones. But I don't remember any animosity. We had Mexicans there, too. Got along with everybody.
And everybody in Lincoln Place stuck together when you went to the other part of
Grand Oh, yeah, Island. Yeah. We would always Lincoln Place. And even, like I said, which I was surprised after I had got out of service, and there was a couple of friends of mine who were East St. Louis, and they had gotten into a little fight, something like that. And they all went a place, and then West Granite came in, too. You know, everybody was one,
yeah,
helping each other. There was, I never, as a matter of fact, a lot of the guys that we might have had fought against as we got older became friends. We weren't enemies.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch with childhood friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I still keep in touch with them. And, matter of fact, Joe Avedesian, well, he was raised, in, his mom had died early, and he was raised in an orphanage. And every time him and his brother would come home, well, all of us guys were always out there, just happy to see him all the time, you know, and really, really happy for one another. And they used to come to my dad's restaurant, and they would eat. And my dad always catered to them, you know, whenever he could. Sam ended up being a policeman, and Joe had a cleaning shop, cleaners there, down Lincoln Place.
When you went in the Air Force, what were your reactions when you moved from so many different places? You saw a lot of the United States of that. I mean, how were you received? Did you have any problems with your ethnic background? Or
No, I never had any problems with my ethnic background. As a matter of fact, I was received just like any other person. Only thing is, I had a so-called buddy that always borrowed money off of me, you know, and I'd give him, I never spent that much, even with 20 bucks, you know, and so I'd always give him, he'd want $5, $10, I always give it to him. So one time I had it, and he asked for it. I thought, no, I'm not going to give it to him this time, so I didn't want to give it to him, and then he started calling me names, you know, different things. But other than that, I never had any problems. And just like some guys, some people used to say, man, you got a big nose. I'd say, no, where I come from, everybody had a nose like this. You guys are different. But you had to laugh, or else you would really hurt yourself. You weren't hurting them. If you got mad at them, you were hurting yourself. Mm. So I never had no problems. I always got along good with them.
And what was your reaction to the United States as a whole? I mean, if you only lived in Lincoln Place, and then suddenly you're seeing all the new and different places in the United States.
Well, when I first went in, back then they had colored separate, you know.
Right.
And down south, where I was stationed most of the time, was down south. And you would see a lot of areas there were colored only and stuff like that. That was the first time I ever ran across anything like that. I never even thought about any of that stuff when we were younger growing up. It never dawned on me about the racial differences, you know, as far as that, the black and the white. But as far as what I've seen, I like all the country. I enjoyed it. Gulfport, I enjoyed that very much. I enjoyed Tennessee. I enjoyed Seattle. I enjoyed all the areas where I went to. It was really something.
Did you have much association with black people when you were growing up?
No, never. I had any association. The only time was whenever I'd go down to Brooklyn, we'd ride our bikes, we'd go down to Brooklyn, and we'd see some, but we never had any problems, nothing. Nobody ever said anything to us, or back then, I don't think there was the tension that there is today.
Right. Personally. Were there any in your school, in high school? Or
we never had any in high school back then. And back in Lincoln Place, and as a matter of fact, there wasn't too many colored, if any, that lived in Granite City at the time. Granite City was known to be an area where the color would not venture into. The only time they'd venture into it is when they're working, you know, in the factories and stuff. But I never...
Never had any problem. Mm-mm. What brought you back to Granite City after the...
What brought me back?
Yeah, after World War II.
Well, my dad was still here in Granite, and I came back to Granite City, and to me, I had no desire, really, to go anywhere else or settle anywhere else. I was, 21 when I got out, and I never had any desire to go anywhere else as far as to live somewhere else, California or anything. Well, my sister's in California, my cousins are in California, my nieces are in California now, you know, back then they weren't. Nephews, and I got a cousin that's in Memphis, Tennessee, and And there was no desire on my part to move out. I had all my friends here.
This was just home.
It was just home, yeah.
There was no consideration of
none whatsoever. My wife, when I married my wife, she was from St. Louis, and then she moved over here and stayed here in Granite. And she was, I wouldn't say she was real happy living in Granite, but she enjoyed it. She made a lot of friends here.
Yeah. Did you live in Lincoln Place when you?
No. Whenever I got married, I had an apartment on Benton Street back then. And the church next door wanted to buy the building, so the apartment, and I sold it to them. And then this area here was just starting up here, and a guy that I used to work with, he was a contractor out here. So I came over here and talked with him, and the money that I got on the payment for the apartment, well, I put down on this home, and then the one next door, which my sister was living in then, and